We've heard about him. Lots of rumors. We don't know what's true and what's not true. We know that our church leaders don't like him. And so we've come to check him out for ourselves. See what we think of him. Jesus went throughout Galilee teaching, preaching, and healing. News about him spread all over Syria. People brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering severe pain, the demon-possessed, the epileptics, the paralytics, and he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee, Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, the region across Jordan followed him. And when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. The disciples came to him and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs alone is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those that mourn, for they alone will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." This kingdom that Jesus is talking about, that he says he's going to establish, is going to be a kingdom that has a contingency of people who are blessed, he says. They're going to have lots of blessings and lots of benefits. A happiness of sorts. A happiness that is altogether dependent on attitude, on what's inside. And altogether independent of circumstances. A happiness that is yours to possess regardless of what happens in your life. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they'll be filled. I've noticed that when I'm on a diet in my life, which I've spent a considerable amount of my life on a diet, that there's only one thing I can think of when I'm on a diet. And that's food. And I also noticed how frequently on television food is advertised when I'm on a diet. My head aches, my stomach growls, my disposition is less than desirable, all because I want something to eat. And not just anything. Carrot sticks and celery are only bearable for so long. Poached eggs and grapefruit just don't stick to your ribs. I know what I want. I want meat and potatoes. I want beans and cornbread. And I think how sad it would be and how tragic it would be to be hungry and for some reason not know what to do about that hunger. Not know how to satisfy that hunger. Just as God has designed our bodies to desire food, He has designed our spirit to desire spiritual food. And that spiritual food can be characterized in the statement, a desperate need to know God. And interestingly, in coming to know God, you come to see yourself more accurately. And also, interestingly, most of us don't like what we see, with good reason. And I think it's probably true that most people don't reject God for who He is, but for what He says about me, that I don't like, that I refuse to accept. The same will be true of these gracious words. here in Matthew chapter 5 in what we've come to call the Sermon on the Mount. You see, improper soul food makes us spiritually deficient and anemic. And the world offers something that looks good and it tastes good and it's fun, but it's hog husks. Now, it might have chocolate on it, but that doesn't change what it is and what it will and won't do for you. Some Christians are trying to feed on that which cannot fill the true need in our life. Peter will say it's like a dog returning to his vomit. It's like a sow returning to her wallowing in the mud. And when you stop in his analogy and ask yourself, what is it that is represented by that vile word, vomit, and the wallowing in the mud? What is it that even those some who have tasted the good word of God want to return to? Well, it's that desire for popularity. It's that desire for praise. It's that desire for power. It is that hunger that we want to fill with superficial things, with things that really are not good for us, things that in fact are detrimental to our health spiritually. And it's really all because we don't want to see ourselves as we truly are. How does this particular beatitude, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, how does it fit in with the others? Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who are spiritual beggars. Forces us, if we are truly poor in spirit, to recognize that all of our pluses in our life add up to a zero. We won't let God make us something if we like what we already are. And so many will walk away. Because the world has taught us to feel good about ourselves within ourselves. And it offers us this feeling of self-importance. Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who realize that spiritually we have absolutely nothing to offer. Poor in spirit, spiritual beggars. And that causes us to mourn. And that's a proper response to the recognition of our spiritual beggarliness. That I'm sad. It makes me incredibly deep down sad, because I am spiritually bereft of any good thing. When I truly see myself as God sees me, and that response also causes us to be meek, to realize that in view of God, I have nothing, I am nothing, and to realize that I don't have to be in control of my life. I don't want to be in control of my life when I see how He controls my life. When I see what He has in store for me, when I know the plan that He has for me, then I can submit to God's will and truly be meek in my life and not have to stand up for myself, but let God take care of all that business. And my responsibility is just to follow Him. And that brings me to our lesson this morning. That makes me hunger and thirst after what God has to offer, rather than what the world has to offer. You see, this is kingdom teaching. And if you do not hunger and thirst after righteousness, then you're not truly a citizen of heaven's kingdom. Our constitution in this country guarantees us the right to pursue happiness, but it cannot guarantee happiness. It cannot guarantee happiness. And maybe it will come as a shock to you, but if it does, it's time for you to hear it anyway. Happiness does not come as a result of being a citizen of the United States of America and living by its rules. It never has and it never will. Nor any other country that cannot bring true happiness. It tells you it will, and most people buy into the American dream, thinking that if I can just realize it, I will in fact be happy. But then, fortunately or unfortunately, lots of folks realize that dream, and we find it empty. And we find that in fact we're not happy, even though we do have more money in the bank than we've ever thought possible in our life. Even though we do have more things and a nicer home and a nicer car and a nicer everything than we ever dreamed we would have when we started out. Deep down inside, we realize I'm still not happy. There's something that's missing. And so we're curious about Jesus, and we follow him, and we hear rumors about him. We don't know if they're true or not, and we find ourselves sitting on the side of the mountain listening to him. And he's telling us that happiness comes as a result of being a citizen of heaven's kingdom, not any earthly kingdom, and living by its rules. You know why a Christian doesn't feel compelled to pursue the things that the world is pursuing? Because God offers those things through a completely different path. You stop and think about what it is that the world offers. Peace, contentment, happiness, security. And yet it can't deliver. But God offers those same things. A completely different path. One that doesn't, it's not logical to the minds that we have developed. It's upside down. Everything is. God has promised us everything that the world is dying to have. Go back and look at the promises that accompany the first four Beatitudes. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. They will be comforted. They will inherit the earth. They will be filled. What is it that we want in life? Is it not those things? Is it not that security? Is it not that peace? Is it not that harmony of relationships? In Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 31, Jesus will say in this same sermon, "So do not worry, saying, 'What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?' For the pagans run after these things, and your Father in heaven knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." He promises the things that we want in this world, that we need in this world, the things that we pursued on our own, thinking that we can realize it, and we can't realize it. Because what the world has to offer cannot satisfy that deep hunger. There's pain in those first two Beatitudes, isn't there? Poor in spirit, mourning. But you see, that pain leads us to search out something deeper than what this world offers. As Paul will say on his address in Mars Hill, that God did certain things in this world, and he created this world and designed it in a certain way so that men would feel after him. To find him. And he said, and he's not far from any one of us. And it is this mourning, it is this pain that we feel, it is this emptiness that we feel inside. It is whenever we can't fill every moment with something exciting in our lives and we're all alone and maybe we've suffered a loss that the world can't touch. That maybe for the first time in our life we realize all is vanity. It's just empty. I've got what I wanted. I've reached some of the goals that I've set out for, and every time I get there, I just want more. What does it mean to hunger and thirst? It's this great, intense desire. This desperation, as our scripture talked about, this desperation for water in a time of drought. You know, it's occurring to me in Texas that as independent as we are and as much technology as we have, if God just doesn't send rain for very long, we're in trouble, folks. I mean something as basic and simple as that overrides all the rest of it, doesn't it? That great intense desire, that desperation. Have you ever seen a man eat that was literally starving? Once in my life, I've seen it. I've seen it in Africa, pretty close to that on numerous occasions, but one time for sure, I know. I was about 10 years old. There was an old man who had no family that had befriended my dad or vice versa. My dad at that time in his life was a commercial fisherman fishing on the Mississippi River. And there was an old man who had a camp, a fish camp. And as I look back on that old man, I was about 9 years old. As I look back on that old man, my feelings toward him were very loving and kind because he was that way toward my dad and his family. But he had no family of his own. He got sick. He ended up in a charity hospital. My dad went to visit him. And he begged my dad when he saw him, he said, "Roy, I'm going to die. I don't want to die here in this hospital." And they had him hooked up to all kind of tubes, and as a young boy seeing this, it was a terrifying sight. He hadn't had any kind of solid food at that point for weeks. He had only been living on IVs. And they had him on an incredible amount of medication. And my dad tried to reason with him and said, "You know, I can't take you out of here. You're hooked up to all these machines and so forth." And he said, "Roy, I've never asked you anything in my life to do. I'm asking you, don't let me die here." And so my dad went down, talked to the doctors, and they said, "It's not possible. If we disconnect him, he won't live 24 hours. And so he came back to the room and he tried to tell him, "You know, I can't do anything about it. It's just not possible." He said, "Roy, I'm begging you. Take me home and let me die at home." And so my dad went back down and he said, "I'm taking him out of here." And they said, "You can't." He said, "Just watch and see." And so he said, "You have 5 minutes to disconnect all these things or I'm disconnecting them myself. I'm taking that old man out of here." And they said, "Well, you're going to sign these papers that you're responsible if you do." He said, "Well, put them in front of me." And he signed the papers. He went and picked the old man up in his arms. I happened to have been with him, and he brought him down the elevator, put him in the back of an old Ford station wagon that we had. Made a pallet for him. And he took him about 85 miles and brought him to our home. It happened to be in the spring, the late spring, when the garden was in and we had lots of fresh vegetables. And I can still remember it. My mother fixed a plate of food for him. And he hadn't had any solid food now, remember, for weeks. She brought in a large plate of food, and what I particularly remember was that there was a large tomato on it. And she had just cut it in half and had a knife and a fork there for him. And so as a kid, I cracked the door just when she took the plate in, and I cracked the door, my sister and I did, and we were watching the old man and because, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen when he tried to eat. And as we watched, he took his knife and his hands were shaking and he began to try to cut that tomato, and he had other peas and bread and so forth. But he was particularly focusing on that tomato, I remember, and he tried to cut it in his hands, wouldn't work. And so he looked to see if anybody was watching, and he didn't see us, and he picked the tomato up, a half of the tomato, and he just started cramming it in his mouth, just as much as he could get in his mouth, as fast as he could eat it. And he ate that tomato. I can still see it, and I can see the juice running down his hands as he was eating it. And it occurred to me, even as a child, that man is starving. And we didn't know if that meal was going to kill him or not. By the way, he got well. And in about 6 weeks, he returned to his fish camp, and he lived about another 10 years before he died. They refused, out of anger, to send any medication home with him at all. They completely cut him off of all of the medication that they were giving him. And I still have that vision in my mind from my childhood of a starving man eating. And every time I read this beatitude, those that hunger and thirst for righteousness, I see that old man eating. And I think of how desperately he wanted food and what it meant to him to have that food. You see, the more that you know God, the more you crave to know him. Psalm 42 says, as a deer pants after the waters, the brooks of water, so my soul longs after you, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Psalm 63, O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My flesh longs for you as in a dry, thirsty land where there is no water, to see your power and your glory. Until your soul longs to know God and to serve him, you can go through all the motions, but you're not really a citizen of the kingdom. As long as you think that this need that you have inside of you can be satisfied with the husk that this world has to offer, then you won't come to the living bread and the living water. Amos said that there were men who pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor. That's what many people hunger and thirst for. They won't gain any way that we can get it. We become obsessed with being entertained, with being happy. And that's a superficial answer to a deeper problem. When we want to forget our troubles, we want to be happy, we're willing to pay anything, well, almost anything. We attend seminars, we read books, we change churches, we divorce our husbands or our wives, we work longer, we take trips, we take drugs. Listen, happiness is a byproduct of righteousness, of being in a right relationship with God, and of being in a right relationship with our fellow man. There's two aspects of righteousness. There's being saved, and there's sanctification. They're staying saved, staying free from sin's dominion. And God fills both of those needs, and only he does. If we hunger and thirst after being and staying right with God, we can never be satisfied with superficial things. They just don't fill the bill. They just don't deliver on their promises. And he says the result is we'll be happy, we'll be filled. And that word filled is a word that is used of an animal that has taken its prey and it has now eaten until it's satiated. It's that lion that is now filled and he's over there lying down under the shade of the tree. They alone, those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, they alone will be filled. And it's a paradox. You keep on hungering. Those who keep on hungering and thirsting after righteousness, God will satisfy with that living bread, that living water. And so our question this morning is, are you dissatisfied with yourself? Really? You see, as we come and sit at his feet, we came to make a decision about him. But interestingly, as we listen to him, he's making us make a decision about ourselves. He's making us form an opinion about ourselves, and we have to decide if we're willing to accept what he says about us, about our spiritual beggarliness, about our unworthiness, and what our attitude is about that. And we can decide, I don't buy that. I don't believe that. I'm just really not that bad. And we can choose the world's course. Or we can accept what he has to say about us and say, he's dead on. He's right. I've tried to be good and tried to be righteous, but I know in my heart that I'm not. And I know that I have sinned and separated myself from God. And I've tried to get back, and I can't get back to him. And so I'm listening to what he has to say. And he tells us the way home. And that's what this whole sermon is about. Are you dissatisfied with yourself? You see, that dissatisfaction is designed to bring you to God, to cause you to sit at his feet, to listen to what he has to say, to accept his evaluation of you. And you have a choice to make. Are you going to listen to him? Or are you going to listen to what the world has to say while we stand and sing?